tape all around the world. Sync your smartphone to your Bluetooth with your earpiece on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd, nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up, it's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Gil T. Wilson. Nerd
Up. Welcome to another episode. I'm Gil T. Wilson, alongside
Eric Billingsley,
Tim Coker,
and Lisa Shelton.
Holy crap, who is that, Batman?
A girl!
I'm telling you. Whoever in here. Does that mean all our cycles are going to be in sync now? I wonder.
Good Lord.
Oh, so Lisa is joining us here on the podcast. And Lisa, first of all, you have to explain why you're a nerd and why you're here.
I am a nerd because I love geeks. I love geek things. I grew up on sci-fi and fantasy, and it should all hail sci-fi fantasy. Mm-hmm. And I've known Eric and Tim for a long time, and so one of them must have thought, hey, let's drag her into this mess. And so I'm here.
That sounds about right. Yeah, okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to answer this honestly and within, just immediately, don't even think about it. Who's your favorite doctor?
Tom Baker.
Okay, you're accepted.
Gotta be. I've got the scarf, come on.
All righty, you're accepted.
Now, I actually have an anecdote here, a Lisa Spencer anecdote.
Oh, okay.
Lisa, how... I'm sorry, I stepped on the your acceptance speech there, but Lisa, okay. Like, how old were you in 1986 or 87?
86, 87, that would have been, what, 14, 15?
That's about right. I think that was the first time I met you. I was coming to pick up your sister for some party, and you guys were in there watching Doctor Who, and you came right to the door and told me at length about how you really liked Jon Pertwee. And I was like, hey, all right, Tracy's little sister's okay.
Yeah, oh man, Jon Pertwee's the man.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Man. Anybody that can reference Pertwee in a Doctor Who, as you know, and not the modern ones, is good. Mm-hmm. And of course, I guess the modern ones weren't around by that time.
Yeah.
All right, well, this week we're going to talk nerdy. We're going to include a girl in the mix, and so we'll have that girlish perspective once in a while. You know, we have to do that. I think it's part of the, what's that, EEOC? I don't know. Anyway, so we have to do that, along with OSHA. The safety things, too, with this. Everybody's got their life vests on, right?
Yes, and my nerd helmet. Yeah. Whenever I hear OSHA, I imagine a giant killer whale. I don't know why.
That would be an occupational safety hazard.
I know it's Orca. Orca.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I always think of it.
A giant killer whale wearing safety equipment.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, right.
The OSHA Orca. Let's jump into some stuff that we want to talk about. And I've got a big, huge kind of topic I'm going to throw all together. Basically, it's got to do with television. And the reason I wanted to bring all this up, now I'm going to list several different television shows. Feel free to jump in and start talking about these as we hit them, but I just want, it's a good time to be a nerd on TV. And first of all, I'm going to start out with, I mean, the reason I say that, you'll see with this list, is that there's a huge amount of sci-fi, fantasy, and comic book based television shows that are just, whether they're good or bad, that's a different story. But it's just good to be a nerd right now because they're all out there for us to sample, and we can critique them. You know, back in the 70s, you had The Incredible Hulk. There was that short-lived Spider-Man TV series, Bionic Man, things like that. And it's like, you didn't really have that many pickings. You know, everybody liked The Bionic Man, but not everybody liked The Incredible Hulk. Or The Spider-Man. That's why The Spider-Man was canceled. Again, it's now it's a great time. Because they're all done, and they're all done pretty well. I'm going to start out, first of all, they brought it back for a second season, Sci-Fi Channel. Helix is, first of all, anybody watching this series?
No. I swore it off after last season.
Well, what about you, Lisa?
I'm afraid not.
I watched the season premiere because I thought, well, the way they ended that last one just kind of disturbed me. And it looks like it's almost like they're trying to do an American Horror Story, which is another series that's on my list here. But they're trying to do an American Horror Story with different stories each time because they didn't really take off where they left off on the last season. It's got now there's another outbreak of this virus on an island, and the island has got some weird cult on it. And they went to this one area on the island, and it's just nothing but skulls all over. It's really creepy. So I'm thinking, interesting twist. And this other virus, it doesn't seem to be the same one they were looking for, but it's another just as deadly. And they did a little time travel thing. It was really cool. You may remember the doctor, Eric. I remember you and I were watching it intently for a while. The one with the silver, she ended up having the silver eyes. She was the daughter of the man that ran the base.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the love interest to the main doctor, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they start out, and she gets on this island, and there's a guy that looks, he looks creepy. I told Isaac that would be the perfect cosplay for him next time around, but it's a real creepy outfit. It's kind of like a burlap mask with a gas mask combined, and it looks almost like something out of, I'm trying to think of the game. Almost, maybe Borderlands. But anyway, it's a really creepy outfit. And she's sitting there staring at this guy, and he just asks her one question over and over. And he goes, "Do you know the way to San Jose?" And it's like, oh, that's so cool. And then all of a sudden, the theme song, "Do You Know the Way to San Jose," with the little lounge music stuff going, starts playing. And then
I think they played that last season.
Yeah, and that's how they opened it this season. It's like, huh. And so she gets abducted by this guy. She's thrown into this, old abandoned barn, and he's dressed in this, and that's the only thing he keeps saying is, "Do you know the way to San Jose?" And then she says, "Yes, yes. What? No, I don't know what you're talking about." Anyway, so he kind of tries to torture her, and at the same time, another group of doctors, the one that was first infected, it was like the brother of the doctor, I wish I knew names, they're going on this island to try to find out why this island is infected, because some people are found dead on a boat, and so this island, they're going to explore it, try to figure out why, what's causing the infection. And they go up to this barn, and they're getting ready to go into this barn. She's getting ready to be tortured. The guy's got like this tweezers going for her eyeball thing, and they keep flashing back and forth. They kick in the door. It's empty. The guy drops this bottle where they kept a jar where they kept a rabbit they found on the island. And then all of a sudden the rabbit starts deteriorating and the time starts flying by, and then basically 30 years go by. And so it's like a 30-year jump into the future thing. Interesting season opener. The last one, we went only like 365 days in the future, 1 year. This one, they went 30 years in the future. So it's, I don't know. This, I think they might do a good job this season. We'll see what happens. But Helix, they're back on Sci-Fi. How about the series 12 Monkeys? Anybody watching that?
I've been curious about it.
Yeah, I DVR'd it, and it's actually been getting really positive reviews from professional reviewers as well as fans. So I'm very curious about it.
You saw the movie, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, then, the movie was just so cool, the whole time travel bit. Well, that they're basically retelling it in a TV form, and they're kind of updated, brought it up to now, the 2015 rather than 1996 or 7, whatever year it was. I think it's basically just a retelling of the movie put into TV series form. Now, there are a few people out there I've heard complaining about, well, like Fargo, for instance. Well, we've already seen the movie. We don't need to see this. Well, okay, how many times have you watched a Shakespeare play? It's like there's so many different versions of Romeo and Juliet out there. People are going to constantly redo it. If you got a good story, you're going to redo it. I think this is worth looking into. I glanced at a series premiere, and it's basically just a retelling of the movie, maybe a little extra thrown in here and there. But a little time travel going on TV, not too shabby.
Hmm. Well, it's interesting that I don't know if you're aware of this, Gil, but the 12 Monkeys movie was actually based on a short film by a French filmmaker, Chris Marker, called La Jetée. And it's told, for the most part, with the exception of just a couple of moments where there's actual motion photography, but it's actually told through still photography, still photographs.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's awesome. You should definitely seek it out. Anyone who's a fan of 12 Monkeys should definitely seek out the original. I wouldn't have never dreamed that I would have been so engaged in a movie that was one still photo after another, but it is done.
Now, what was the name of it? La Jetée?
Yeah. Okay. LAJETEE.
Okay.
Which I think is French for runway or airport or something like that.
Huh.
I don't know French, so.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that they've gone from a short film to a feature-length film, and now to an entire TV series based on this one nugget of an idea.
Yeah. It should be pretty interesting. Hold on. Wasn't the original... Yeah, Terry Gilliam. I had to look it up. Terry Gilliam directed the original. The I mean, not the original, but the 12 Monkeys movie. So anything done by a Monty Python person's got to be good.
Or at least worth checking out.
Yeah, exactly. But the TV series, again, I guess Terry Gilliam's not directing it, but, you know. But I don't know, I just think it's a neat way to tell that story in a longer form than just one movie. And besides, the TV series doesn't have Bruce Willis, so I'm happy.
Oh, you didn't like Bruce Willis in the movie?
I have rarely liked Bruce Willis in a movie.
Really?
Period.
Wow.
I'm kind of ambivalent about him, too.
Yeah. I liked him in Moonlighting, the TV series, and that's about the last thing I really liked him in.
Wow. You didn't like him in that's Die Hard?
Yeah.
How can you not like him in Die Hard? Come on. All right, we won't go off on that.
Yeah. There's not enough time. But, yeah.
Can you believe I didn't see Die Hard until last year?
No way,
wow.
Really? Lucky.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I was pretty sick of Bruce Willis by the time it came out, you know, because I'd been watching Moonlighting and watched it, you know, as it kind of declined. And, I was just like, I don't know, it doesn't look any good, man. And then it was one of those things that everybody'd seen, and I didn't go see it. And so, yeah, last year I finally saw it. I'm like, oh, so that's where all that came from.
Multiple cultural
references. I fell asleep watching it.
Did
you? In the theater. Yeah, well, I was, okay, here's your girl perspective.
That's definitely...
I was pregnant, so... Sitting still, dark room, asleep.
Get it while you can.
Yeah.
If it works, it works.
Yeah.
That's right.
No, I admit I did see Die Hard in the theater, but yeah, I haven't liked a Bruce Willis. I just don't like the guy very much. But yeah, and I'm glad he's not in 12 Monkeys, a TV series. Moving on to another TV series. The Librarians. Anybody watching this one?
I do.
Aha.
I've watched all of them except one.
Oh, and now what do you
think?
The
TV series.
Yeah. Now, what do you think of the series?
I think it's very lighthearted. You're not going to get a lot of deep philosophical meaning out of it, but it's good lighthearted fun. But I will complain about one thing, and I'm very, very firm about this.
Okay.
I swear to God, if they don't stop putting Cassandra in hot pants, I'm going to stop watching it. It's so unnecessary. It's ridiculous.
That's it. I'm watching it now. Well, I have yet to watch it. I've got it all DVR'd. Every episode so far that's aired, I've got it DVR'd. And I want to watch it because I love the concept. It's actually, to me, very much like Warehouse 13.
That's the comparison I've heard a lot.
Very much.
Okay. And now the thing is, though, I'm wary because of that, because first couple episodes of Warehouse 13 were okay, but after that I got tired of it. I'm wondering how this is going to go.
Well, see, that's why I haven't watched The Librarians. And I watched every episode of Warehouse 13, so I guess I have to call myself a fan if I watched every episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a fan of the characters, not so much of the story or the concept itself. In fact, the writing, more often than not, was pretty lame. But I liked the characters, and that's what kept me coming back. But, you know, these comparisons to Warehouse 13 aren't making me want to watch The Librarians.
I'll tell you, Noah Wiley, who plays the head librarian, who's in the movies,
right?
Which I have not seen the movies, oddly enough, but he's not in every episode. He's in the first episode, he's in the last episode, and he makes a couple of other appearances. And when he's in it, he really makes it more lively, just the way he plays the character.
Really?
But when he's, yeah, and when he's out of it, I don't know, they've got three new librarians, plus their guardian, plus the guy who's at the library, so they don't have a lot of time to spend on any one character, and that gets a little frustrating.
Well, they got a whole season to do that, maybe they'll... Now, wait, Rebecca Romijn is in this, right?
Yes, she's the guardian.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
exactly.
She kicks butt, man. She kicks butt. I wouldn't want to go up against her.
Cool. Well, see, I've got some, I don't know. I love Noah Wiley. Now, what was that sci-fi series he was on? Not sci-fi, but TNT series.
Dark Skies?
Yeah. What?
Was it Dark Skies? No.
Falling Skies.
Yeah. That's it.
I loved that series because of him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he carried that series. Now, there were moments in the series that is like, wait a minute, that's a bit hokey. And there's your Deus Ex Machina right there, another alien. But anyway, that's another story. but him, he really led that the way he carried his character through the series. So that's kind of why I was wanting to watch it. But I did know that he wasn't in every episode, so I'm kind of good with that.
Yeah.
So again, now, another sci-fi type series, right?
Yes. Very, very sci-fi. Almost like hints of archaeology, which is another thing that I love. Plus, partway through, the bad guy is revealed as Max Headroom.
Oh, really? Matt Frewer?
Matt Frewer?
Yes.
Nice.
Love that guy.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Ever since Max Headroom.
So he's very fun.
All right, I'm going to have to start watching it. I've got, like I said, I've got a DVR, and I just haven't had the gumption, I guess, to turn it on and actually watch it. But again, another series rolling in with the sci-fi. I think actually, Lisa, you just convinced me to watch it. I was on the fence, but I think you just made me want to watch it. Not because of the hot pants.
It's fun. It's fun. You're not going to get any deep meaning out of it, but you will be entertained.
All right, so we got those three TV series going right now. Another group of TV series. We have, I'm just going to kind of throw these all at once, The Flash, you've got Arrow, okay, Gotham is there, we'll put it that way, Agent Carter, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., comic books are on TV like crazy. Usually you had to wait like once every 5 years for a good comic book-based TV series. Spider-Man, The Hulk, we had Swamp Thing, The Flash in the 90s. See, you just kind of had to wait long periods of time, not counting animated. Animated is a different story, but these are all live action TV.
You got to give credit where credit's due, regardless of how you feel about the movies themselves. But, I mean, the new Batman reboot movies really got the ball rolling on that.
And, yeah,
but Marvel has elevated that to a whole new level, and has, you know, they picked up the baton and ran with it. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, pretty much Marvel saw all the Batman success and they said, Excelsior! And they took off and... Oh, man, they've done a great job. So, but yeah. And it's a great time to be a comic book nerd right now because of these TV shows. Any of those shows anybody wants to focus on particularly right now?
Well, you know, I want to say one thing about Arrow and The Flash.
Uh-huh.
And I had a complicated relationship with with Arrow especially for years because I don't think it's a good show, but it's bad in a way that's kind of interesting and entertaining enough that it's kept me tuning in. And I do not have a lot of time to watch bad things, you know, but I keep tuning in to this show that like astonishes me with the lack of charm of the entire cast. But anyway, so I was going with it this week, and I appreciate that they're trying to lighten up and everything, and that's good.
Yeah.
And I've been watching The Flash this season too, which I liked because it was less kind of relentlessly dour and, gee, you guys, this is really serious, you know, all the time. So, like, I liked it. But something crystallized for me when they did the two crossover episodes, which we never got to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were on podcast hiatus at that point. And that is that in the end, Oliver Queen is an unlikable jerk, and I just don't want to watch a show about him. Like, the way he's training with Barry, and training with Barry means hiding two crossbows to fire bolts into his shoulder blades, and then he just tosses it off by saying, I hear you heal fast.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not Wolverine, you know? Anyway, like, so I've pretty much given up on that show, although I liked Brandon Routh on that show, and he gave me a reason to watch it, but I can't keep up. And so yesterday, I just finally watched the mid-season finale of The Flash, and I think I'm quitting on that, too.
Aww.
Like, it's a cute show. I love that they're trying to be fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that there are people with actual charm on the show, a couple of them. And, you know, charm's important, right? I mean,
right.
I swear that half of Marvel Studios' success is down to charm.
Look at Rocket Raccoon.
Exactly. Well, all of them, you know.
Yeah.
How do they have, like, three Chrises, you know, in their top tier, and we don't want to get rid of any of them? They're all great. But the thing about Flash is that I really feel like it's written for like 10-year-olds, and I can't tell because they're trying to cover these grown-up serious things, mm-hmm. you know, about murder and all this other stuff, but everything is pitched at such a literal level, you know, where Barry's always talking about, I wasn't fast enough, or run, Barry, and all this stuff. And, you know, just all of it. I'm constantly aware that I'm watching actors reciting dialogue that's been written for them. I never lose myself in the characters, and I think I'm just going to give up. I'm tired of the whole Iris and Barry thing.
Yeah.
You know? And,
well, noticing how, like you said, like written for 10-year-olds, but look at the movies from DC. They're like written for, well, they're trying to be like adult, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so how about that contrast between the two? Are they ever going to meet in the middle and get DC Comics on any kind of media correct?
I want to believe. I want to believe because, you know, I love a lot of these characters. I don't love them the way I love the Fantastic Four, you know, or whatever, but I do have a lot of... I love Superman. He's the tops for me, but I just think that there's this sense of insecurity And they've spent so long trying to be all grim and serious. And you guys, this is really super serious. This isn't a joke, okay? And they've spent so long doing that that I think that often getting a light touch just seems out of reach. And the Flash needs a light touch, but even that feels like they're writing to make sure you get everything. You know, like it's, there's no confidence in it, I guess is what I'm getting at. I don't feel like they're projecting this sense of security. I mean, you watch Agent Carter, mm-hmm. that show, you know, it ain't perfect, but it is done with swagger.
You know, with
confidence to spare, plenty of humor in its place. You know, it gets you right in the feels. And, you know, I think that they're doing some good development with Peggy. I hope, you know, I hope she doesn't just, you know, stay this kind of perfect idealized vehicle of empowerment. I hope that she, you know, gets more complexity, which they're hinting at. You know, I don't get that level of confidence in the presentation of the Flash. I feel like they're still trying to figure it out. So,
yeah,
I think it boils down to one simple thing, and that DC/Warner doesn't know their audience. Marvel totally knows their audience, totally respects their audience. They know exactly what their audience wants to see, and they're more than happy to give it to them.
Warner Brothers doesn't
have a clue.
But what's funny is when you said they know their audience, I immediately thought of was Arnim Zola in the first Captain America movie, right? When he's being interrogated by Tommy Lee Jones, and Tommy Lee Jones is like, you know, what's the Red Skull's target? His target is everywhere. And it's like, that's Marvel.
You're right.
That's Marvel, because what they realized is their audience is everybody. And mm-hmm. they're making movies and TV shows, you know, that are very inclusive. I mean, I think that they realize that their kids are gonna find stuff to like, adults are gonna find stuff to like. Just let it happen.
Yeah.
And I really like it. I like that they're not hung up on showing everybody that comic books aren't just for kids anymore. You know? So
they're showing it.
I feel like
they're for everybody.
Still needs to get the memo.
That's a good. I'm gonna have to get that scene and maybe play it over next time we talk about something about how DC's getting it wrong. We'll play that soundbite. It's for everywhere. So.
Well, you know, Tim, I think I can back you up on this thing with the Flash because I don't watch it. I was thinking about watching it, but I have not. And the reason I watch Supernatural. So turn over, getting ready for Supernatural, I see about the last 5, sometimes 10 minutes of The Flash, plus the preview for the next week. And out of those two things, I have no need to watch the whole episode.
And that's a fail. If you can't walk in on the exciting finale and not want to see the rest of the show,
yeah,
that's a fail, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good point. Well, funny you bring up Supernatural. That's my next group of TV shows to talk about here. Actually, only two of them that I can think of off the top of my head. If you can throw another one in, feel free. But
okay,
Supernatural.
Can I interject, please?
Okay.
Please watch the spoilers, just because I'm in the middle of the last season they have on Netflix, and I'm not caught up yet. And I swear I'm going to get caught up before the end of this season.
On Supernatural?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm only 2 seasons in, so.
All right. No spoilers, but.
Oh, Eric. Oh, you have such a wonderful time ahead of you.
I know. I need to get back on track.
All right. For you guys behind, we won't spoil it. But I do want to talk in general then about Supernatural and Grimm and other types of shows like that, with the monster sci-fi. Well, I wouldn't quite say sci-fi, but the monster fantasy type TV
kind
shows.
Type.
And a little bit of horror, yeah.
I've got a little something that I noticed in watching the first season of Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, yeah,
that
throw that one in.
Ties in. They were talking about so many different types of monsters and adversaries in Sleepy Hollow that had already been addressed in Supernatural, and they were matching up perfectly. So it just creates this idea that this is real.
I never realized that. Okay. See, I never watched Sleepy Hollow.
I watched the first season. The second season, kind of fell off. But yeah, they really, really made a connection for me, and it made it more real.
Wait, it
yeah,
made
I'm
it more
still
real
watching
because
it, but I'm losing interest. It's definitely declining.
Did it make it more real because you felt you were familiar with the creatures they were talking about, or
it was familiarity plus okay, they addressed it in this show on this network, and then you've got this completely different show on a completely different network, and hey, they're kind of in the same vein.
So it gives it credibility, kind of.
Kind of, yeah.
I see.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, actually, I guess one I forgot to mention that we could kind of throw into both of these categories, comic book and horror, I guess, Constantine.
Well, yeah, I was going to actually bring up the fact that pertaining to what Lisa was just saying was we had that discussion previously about how most of Constantine's tricks of the trade have already been exploited by Supernatural.
Right.
And that they're coming into it and, you know, coming into it late in the game, and the comparisons to Supernatural are going to be, you know, unavoidable. And I think that the same thing can be said of Sleepy Hollow, that, you know, because Supernatural has been on for 10 seasons.
Yeah, exactly.
My God, I've only seen the first two seasons, but there were a plethora of monsters and things that go bump in the night that were explored in just those first two seasons. After 10 years, I can only imagine that there's no stone left unturned.
You have no idea.
Yeah, because even the seasons where they get into where they have a big mythological arc across the entire season, still very much keep the monster of the week going as well.
Yeah.
And
they still, grows.
I think one of the charming things about Supernatural, and one of the things that keeps me going, is not only do they have this, like you said, these mythological arcs, and they still have the monster of the week, so to speak, but they also have, every once in a while, they'll throw in one of those funny episodes, you know?
Yes.
I love them.
And those are, like, some of the best, and it's like, you look forward, you know there's going to be at least one or two every season, and it's like, oh, those are great. Like, when they had the trickster on there, Loki, or whatever his name was.
Yeah.
Those are the one where Sam kept dying, and you know, the Groundhog Day kind of thing going on.
Things oh, like, that's the greatest.
Yeah, or the one with the cat scratch that gave him the fever and what was that?
He turned into Ted Nugent?
No.
No. Oh, and don't forget the black and white horror movie.
Oh my
gosh,
yeah.
Horror movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, they do so many of those, and that keeps the charm going. And again, I think that's the one that it can appeal to all audience there on that, because they have the funny ones, they have the scary ones, they have monsters, and they have one story going on the whole season. And so, yeah, that's Supernatural has done it right for a long time, and then these others are just trying to play catch up at this point. But they're on TV now, though. That's one of my points here. And finally, well, not finally, I got one more. But we could throw in Hannibal and American Horror Story on. They're a little bit more than just horror fantasy. These guys are just pure horror. American Horror Story, we talked that one to death pretty much last podcast. But it's one of those that's got a very, very dark horror story to it throughout the season. And Hannibal, Eric, you're a big Hannibal fan.
I am a huge, huge, huge Hannibal fan, and I wish more people watched it, but I can't really blame them, because it's a really hard show to watch if you don't have a cast iron stomach. I mean, it is so gory, and I mean, when I first saw this on NBC, I could not believe that they were allowing something this graphic and this just gross on a network television show. But you know, times have changed. But I do want to say, though, in reference to Supernatural, when I hear you and other people talking about Supernatural, I can't help but think of the X-Files. And Tim, you'll understand this. When you're talking about doing the comic episodes and the self-referential episodes and the meta, that was all part of the X-Files. And it's interesting that the X-Files, this week, they posted online that Fox is in talks now. They're going to bring back the X-Files.
Yeah, I heard that.
Holy moly.
Yeah, yeah. Whether, for better or for worse, I have no idea how good it's going to be. But I'm a little excited to see it. I mean, it's going to have Mulder and Scully. They're not bringing back Doggett and those horrible other people that they had in the last three seasons. It's going to be Mulder and Scully. But, I mean, all of that, they did the best episodes of X-Files were the ones that were self-referential and that kind of made fun of themselves and what they had established. But Hannibal, it was supposed to be on already, and they have pushed it back to summer, which really, really sucks. I mean, the show has trouble finding an audience as it is. I mean, it's just barely, it's the only reason it's still on is because they get a lot of money from overseas. It's a co-production with Europe, and the Europeans, they have a lot more stomach for this kind of thing. But it's a very artsy show, and I wanted to continue to go on and on and on. But then moving it to summer, I'm like, are you trying to kill what little audience that you have? I mean, no one watches TV during the summer. I don't know what they're doing.
I think it sounds like they're giving up on it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like, maybe they are, and that's the way they can, without breaking any contracts.
But the president of NBC or whoever of programming or whatever in the interview, in the article that I read about this, he's like, oh, yeah, we absolutely love Hannibal. And, and we think that, you know, we've got great plans for our summer lineup and blah, blah, blah. But, I'm sure it's all political BS that they're just dumping the show. But,
well, I got to be honest.
If you haven't watched it, it's and you have the stomach for it, it's really unlike anything else you are ever going to see on TV.
Definitely so. I mean, I got to be honest, though, Eric. I watched a couple episodes of it because you just kept recommending it highly, and I'm like, okay, I got to try this. And I love, I mean, I've got the strong stomach. I'm a horror movie fan from all the way back. I love the gore in a horror movie. That doesn't bother me at all. And so that wasn't an issue. The issue for me was the stories. The two episodes I did watch were slow. Like Lisa in Die Hard, I fell asleep. But I wasn't pregnant, so...
You're sure?
Well, maybe. It just seemed to move so slowly each episode. And I can't blame it on the actors. The actors are awesome. They do their roles perfectly. It was just slow for me, and I just couldn't. I just said I have no desire to watch it because of that.
It is very deliberately paced.
Yeah.
I wouldn't use the term slow. But it's part of the style of the show, and you know they do have these long, deliberate shots that mm-hmm. just kind of gaze up on, especially when Lecter has made some horrific work of art out of a unfortunate victim. They tend to just almost erotic. It sounds really perverse to say this, but it's almost an erotic gaze upon these things. I don't know. It's hard to describe the show because it's so unlike anything else. But yeah, if you're expecting a lot of action and a lot of quick cuts, you're not going to get that here. It's a very different show.
Eric, as you were saying that, I kept picturing you lowering a rope down your cellar into a pit. But I don't know.
It was a lotion in the basket.
Yeah. just this image.
Or because of the hose.
All right. Well, yeah. And I mean, granted that, I mean, it wasn't for me. It is, Eric, you like it and you're a horror fan and it's on TV. One other show that I have to throw in, even though, I mean, we talk about this one to death all the time, but Doctor Who, it's on. Everybody's favorite. It has been around, what, 50 years?
50 years.
So, I mean, that one's been on TV, but thanks to the public broadcasting BBC, and then public broadcasting brought it to America, and then now it's on BBC America is where I get it, but Sci-Fi once in a while shows it. Do they still show the Doctor Who series at all on Sci-Fi?
No, not on Sci-Fi.
No.
And they did for a while for a long period of time. I guess that was before they went to Syfy as their slogan, which they've grown to regret. The other aspect of that is, speaking of Syfy, they've regretted changing to Syfy, and because they cut out a lot of those sci-fi, and they started putting stuff like Sharknado and Lavalantula's coming up. They've actually, you know, kind of went away from the sci-fi. Now they've regretted that, and now they're going back to sci-fi. So what it is, about this day and age, like I said, it's great to be a nerd or a geek. What is it that's making this happen? Is it our age group that's forcing television to say, hey, we need to cater to them? What do you guys think is going on that makes all these things available right now?
Honestly, I think it's Marvel. I mean, really, Marvel has shown that the sky's the limit as far as the profitability of nerdy material. And I think that it's taken that to wake everyone up. It's like, hey, you know, we could actually do genre stuff and still make money off of it, you know, but it's got to be good. Warner Brothers is proving again and again that you can't just throw something together with an established property and expect people to show up. It's got to be good.
Yeah, I think there's that. I think that a lot of it can be ascribed to the rise of the internet, because to me, I feel like the internet has created kind of a safe space where people can sort of follow what they're interested in a lot more easily than they could, for instance, when we were younger. I feel like there's less of a hurdle for people to say, oh, you know, I really like Star Trek, or I really like this, or I really like that. I have a feeling that, like, people like us, we've been, you know, flying the flag all of our lives, but I think there are a lot of people who maybe were not that comfortable acknowledging their interest in it, because, you know, being relentlessly mocked and whatnot, you know, we all remember that, how marginal it used to be. And I just feel like the internet's kind of allowed everybody to say, oh yeah, I like this. I think definitely with women, I don't know, Lisa, tell me what your perspective is, but one of the things that I marvel about on Facebook is how many super fine ladies I used to know in college that I had no idea they were geeks. Like, Lisa, I had no idea your sister Tracy was as much of a geek as you were, you know.
Well, you know, I didn't even know she was that much of a geek.
Oh, okay, so it's not just me.
No,
I wonder if women are more comfortable kind of coming out as geeks now than they used to be. I don't know if that's the case, because I feel like that audience has been getting stronger and stronger. And I credit that with being a lot of the success of it, you know.
We're having a more of an opportunity to be able to say, hey, I'm no longer the only girl I know that likes this stuff.
Right.
When before I was, you know, when I was in high school, I was the only girl in my group who liked all of this.
Right.
And then, you know, as I got into bigger arenas than in college, I found more. And now on the internet, you know, I'm finding girl geeks all over the world, and it's really helping us become braver in expressing our love for it.
You know,
because it's a less judgmental space.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Another aspect of it is that I think you're onto something there with the internet aspect, Tim, is that it's a wider world now. It's no longer, okay, like, Tim, you and I grew up, and I guess we all did, grew up in a little small towns in Illinois here. And, I mean, this was our world for the longest time. I can remember Robinson, when I left Robinson, Illinois, when I joined the Navy, I went out to the West Coast, and all of a sudden I was just covered with, like, all this geeky, nerdy stuff, and I'm like, I'm able to look at, I mean, another thing was I was into music really big. The music scene on the West Coast was way different. I'm like, holy crap, I need to tell these people. By then, it's like, you know, I'd bring back some album or some movie or something, you know, and everybody, wow, where's this coming from? That's alien stuff over there on the West Coast. And I think that's what it is. The internet, now everybody can get it no matter where they are.
Right. Doctor Who used to be so esoteric, and it's just not anymore. Like, I mean, you know, maybe that's part of what bugs me, is it's not my special little area anymore. But it's incredible that, like honestly, I really love it that it's there for so many more people. Because, like, to me, when I saw Doctor Who, when I was, like, probably, I became aware of it probably when I was, like, 11, 1979, just reading about the show. And then, like, a year later, I got to read comics, you know, those Tom Baker comics with the Iron Legion and all that, you know. And then a year after that, I got to see the show, and it was like, this is it. You know, it was like everything I loved all in one show. And I, you know, I was really lucky to have PBS to bring that to me. But now any kid anywhere can find it, you know, and the news travels so fast.
Yeah.
When something blows up,
it goes viral.
Indeed.
Yeah, there's something to be said for the accessibility to these things too now. Because, I mean, for the longest time, if it wasn't on PBS, there was no way to see Doctor Who. There was no such thing as DVDs. I mean, I knew a few people that had, like, bought the videotapes from, like, overseas, but I don't think that they even sold the videotapes in the U.S.
No.
At least not all of them.
Yeah.
I think a few select episodes you could get here. But now, I mean, you know, if you want to see something, even if it's something that's 50 years old, all you got to do is look it up on the internet. There is usually a way to find it. It may not necessarily be a legal channel, but there are ways to see whatever you want to see now.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things. Finally, we're able to realize we're not just the only ones. All I can say, let's be thankful that we got all this stuff on TV. Whether it's good or bad, give it a shot first time around. If you don't like it, that's okay. You know, let everybody know that what you don't like about it, and that's what the internet's all about. But at the same time, at least give it a shot. Because at least I gave Hannibal a shot. Oh, wait, I want to throw one more on here. I mean, I couldn't find a category for this final one. Archer. Does anybody watch Archer?
I love it so much, but I haven't seen the last season.
Oh, really? The Archer Vice season you're talking about?
Yeah, no, I'm dying for it.
Oh, my gosh.
Just haven't made it over there yet.
It's a great season. And then
Archer is so good.
That season, it basically took place... And now they're back to normal again, so keep on this new season. I don't know. It's got a comic book quality to it. It's got a little espionage quality to it. How would you guys... Cool is what I'd say.
Definitely. I mean, I would put it in the same category as, like, the Venture Brothers, where it's super, super smart, very adult... I think the Venture Brothers is probably smarter than Archer, but Venture Brothers is smarter than pretty much everything I've ever seen on TV. Okay, maybe not exactly, but the Venture Brothers is like a crazy smart show. But anyway, blah, blah, blah. They're both in kind of this world of extremely well-informed pop culture pastiche / parody.
Uh-huh.
You know, where, you know, in Archer's case, it's doing the kind of super spy world, both James Bond style.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of also a more comic booky approach.
Yeah.
But And I would say the James Bond that they're referencing really seems to be like the 70s and 80s Roger Moore version. That's kind of the cheesy, you know, spy world I see, but with more high tech.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's just great because it's something that it's a really right on parody of what it's parodying. And at the same time, it's kind of enjoyable for what it's parodying as well. You know, like the Venture Brothers is a super exciting show, as well as being a send up of super exciting shows. You see what I'm saying?
yeah.
So I put them in the same league there.
I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that 100%. Yeah, one of the things about Archer, well, on this last season, the drug running thing aspect of it, I can't give you a spoiler, but they totally,
that's all right,
totally go a different direction for a little while, and it's just hilarious because of that. Because they know they're going a different direction.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's another one of those nerdy shows on there that I just had to throw in. So basically, it's a good time to be a nerd. Now if we get Avengers 2 to be here faster, well, then we can talk about movie
That's
nerds.
That's all I want.
I know, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, moving on. We've got a few more minutes to fill for the rest of the podcast here. I wanted to move on to the next subject here, which is movies. And Eric, you brought this to everybody's attention, and I have a feeling that you and Tim have got a few things to say about it. And that's DreamWorks doing a live-action version of Ghost in the Shell with none other than, Eric, who?
Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I love Scarlett Johansson in the right role. I mean, in some roles I've seen her in, she's very miscast, but in the right role, I think she's great. I mean, I've been a fan of her since she was in Ghost World when she was like, you know, a teenager. But no one could be worse for this part than Scarlett Johansson. Any Anglo-Saxon person should not be up for this role. It's
yeah.
Ghost in the Shell is one of the most beloved and well-known anime. I mean, I'm not an anime fan. There's a lot of anime that just I don't like the big eyes that take up like half the face. I don't like the goofy voices. There's a little bit of the goofy voices going on in Ghost in the Shell, but for the most part, it's done pretty straightforward. But I remember seeing this in the theater when I was in college, and I don't know if maybe Tim talked me into it or someone recommended it. And I don't think it was like at a theater. I think I must have seen it at the student center or something. But
okay.
I went in and saw this movie, and within 5 minutes, I mean, I was literally blown out of my seat. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before. It was so cinematic, and I mean, you talk about slow. You were talking about Hannibal. I mean, the shots in the first few minutes of this are so deliberate and slow. These long zoom ins and pan outs, and the music just was absolutely out of this world. I've never seen anything to this day that's anything like Ghost in the Shell. It is a creature unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's anime. It's Japanese. It's all, you know, all the characters. Well, there's an American character in there, and there's some Russian characters. But I mean, the main characters are all Japanese. They have Japanese names, and I've seen the argument being made online that, you know, most anime characters are drawn to look more like Western facial features than they are like Asian. But that's a weak argument. And I think that's more just something to do with anime style in general. I don't necessarily think that the anime animators are trying to make their characters look like, you know, Americans or Westerners in any way. I just think that's the anime style. But that's much said. Ghost in the Shell is very much an adult anime.
Yeah.
It's got nudity. It's extremely violent, and it's very political. I mean, you have to really pay attention to what's going on in that film. And for DreamWorks to do this, first of all, is like bizarre. And you know that they're going to make this a PG or PG-13 film, which is a big mistake right off the bat.
You really think
and
they will?
So, oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Guaranteed they will. There is no way that DreamWorks is going to make this an R-rated live-action film. Mm. No way will they do that.
No, it'll be PG-13.
Wow.
Yeah. So my expectations are really low. I mean, I would love to see a lovingly rendered live-action Japanese-produced film of Ghost in the Shell. I think it could be an amazing live-action film. DreamWorks is not the ones to do this.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't thinking DreamWorks, all their other stuff. Yeah, I guess. Didn't they do a live-action version of Akira? Or did
no,
ever...
they kept talking about it with, like, Justin Timberlake and stuff, but it never happened.
Okay. Oh. Maybe, see, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Of course it is.
See,
Akira's I mean, like, to me, Akira is you know, the movie, the animated movie, is a hugely compromised condensation of a comic book epic. You know, Akira is something you could never do as an American blockbuster movie, never. You know, and I'm not as familiar with Ghost in the Shell. I mean, I feel like it's hard to say. On the one hand, I think they're missing an opportunity, because if they made this full, went the full, you know, Neo Tokyo craziness thing with this, you know, they went all the way to Japan, cast all Japanese actors or Japanese American or whatever, but put Asian faces in this movie and don't whitewash it. I think they would have potential to do something that's really breakthrough, because the Asian market, like actual Asia, not Asian American, but the Asian market is enormous. And I think they would really eat it up. And I think that if they made it right, people would go. I think now is a time when people are so much more open to that than they used to be. And it just seems kind of disappointingly conventional, you know, but at the same time, it's hard to argue, you know, if they're like, well, you know, it's got Scarlett Johansson in it. And, you know, if we put her in it and it's pretty much, you know, in an action movie, it's pretty much guaranteed that people are going to show up and, you know, put butts in seats. And who are we to tell them to turn their backs on the dump truck full of money, you know? You know, like their responsibility is to their stockholders. And you know what I mean? It's all. I wish it was more art oriented, and it's a shame that they don't have the vision to do something truly surprising with it.
Well, Ghost in the Shell is never going to have a huge draw. I mean, they should know that, even with all the explosion of geek culture, they know that Ghost in the Shell, the name, the title, is not going to put a lot of asses in the seat, so to speak. So, you know, if you want to do a generic actioner with Scarlett Johansson, do one. I'm sure there's a bazillion scripts that fit that market, that fit that description, waiting to be produced. Don't do Ghost in the Shell unless you want to be true to the story, and casting Scarlett Johansson is not being true to the story. Now, I did want to throw in that there was a Japanese-produced movie, which I haven't seen. I've got it, and it's on my list to watch. It's a live-action version of an anime called Space Battleship Yamamoto. Now, I've heard that it wasn't exactly a 100% success, but it did well in the Japanese market. But it's, you know, I don't think it did much here. It went direct to video here. It certainly didn't get a theatrical distribution. But the precedent is there for, you know, conversion of anime to live action, and it typically does well in Asia. So I would like to see this done in Asia.
Well, I got one thing. Going back to my statement I said earlier about when talking about 12 Monkeys, the TV series, and Fargo, it's like, you know, I always give it a chance. People can remake all they want, but I'm just thinking how difficult it is to translate all the artwork and everything that's in any anime. I mean, that's one of the big draws for me for an anime, the artwork. And how do you translate that into, you know, real time, you know, or you know, real life stuff. I think there's gonna be a loss of stuff right there, because there's so many scenes in Ghost in the Shell, in the TV series even, where the phasing in and out of reality into the ghost world, whatever you want to call it. It's been a while since I've seen it, so that's just gonna be hard to translate into you know, live action, and I think they're gonna have a hard time. I don't see problem redoing it. Maybe, you know, again, maybe they got another way to tell the story. Who knows? But at the same time, it's iffy. You know, again, there's a lot going to be lost because of the artwork use.
Yeah.
All righty. I know we had some more things to talk about, like video games, but we have to close out. Lisa, are you still with us?
I'm still here.
We didn't bore you or anything. Well. All right, so you have just been initiated in your first episode of the Nerd Up podcast.
We'll teach you the secret handshake next week.
Nice.
Here's a clue. It doesn't use the hand. Anyway.
Oh man.
Foot.
Oh, it's a foot.
I don't want to know.
It's the foot. God. You guys are
people
twisted.
Have dirty minds.
You twisted people.
Oh,
it's actually going to involve the elbow, but you know. So did we harm you other than that last comment?
No, this has been so much fun. I really enjoyed it.
All right. Well, then I will tell you this: you're welcome back when we need a female point of view. You're going to be our go-to.
Hey, you always need a female point of view.
That's true. That's true. So, hey,
that one.
We're not writing you off. You're definitely going to be coming back sometime. hopefully soon. So, Lisa, thanks for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, then we'll go ahead and close this out. Let me give you a little few things. We gotta keep the podcast rolling for free. It is free, so, you know, but if you think you find some value in it, feel free to donate, or you can always shop Amazon using the links on the Nerd Up Podcast website. It's nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. Buy some t-shirts. Let me tell you, the Tim Coker special t-shirts are freaking awesome. Beautiful t-shirts, and trust me, people will, you will become the center of attention when they see that. They're like, ooh, that's cool. And then you'll have friends. Well, it worked for me anyway. Get one of those t-shirts, subscribe, and let your friends know, and visit the website often. You can also leave us voicemail on the website if you want to be included on one of the future podcasts. You can record an email message, and we'll include it on the next podcast. We've done that before. So, in the meantime, also, if you want to get a hold of us, I keep thinking what we need to do here. You need to get a hold of us. You can tweet us at Nerd Up Podcast, or you can tweet me, Guilty Wilson. You can tweet me at Gil Wilson, along with
at Eric Bill, ericbill.
Tim K has to say.
If you have any desire whatsoever to tweet me, I am at Lisa M 42. That's LESAM 42.
Nice. The answer to everything right there. All right. All right. So that's it for another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. Once again, I hope you had fun. And don't forget, guys, you're going to be with me on this one. Stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy.
Nerd Up Podcast.
www.gilwilson.com. If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.